Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota parents, educators, and health officials are facing a four-year gap in data about risky youth behaviors related to drinking and drug use, sexual activity, and eating habits. The lack of information about what young people are actually doing can impair efforts at the state and local levels to prevent dangerous or unhealthful behaviors. Dr. Joshua Clayton is the South Dakota State Epidemiologist, and he joins us better to explain the issue. Josh Clayton, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right. Tell us about the youth risk behavior surveys to start out with. What is this survey? And then we'll get into why that gap is existing.
Yeah, so the Youth Risk Behavior Survey is a survey of 25 schools across the state of South Dakota. So it's open to 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders. The Department of Health works with CDC to select from all of the schools that are across the state, those 25 schools for each of the survey years. And the survey itself focuses on a lot of different risk behaviors and just general health topics that are important to that high school population. So it includes things like drug, alcohol, and tobacco use, diet, nutrition, and physical activity, and things related to injuries and sexual health.
All right. So this the gap in the data goes back a few years, and it goes back to the South Dakota legislature and a decision that was made. Tell us a little bit about what led to the current trouble that we're having getting those numbers.
Sure. So we do this survey every 2 years. So we do have quality data from, you know, more recent years, 2013, 2015. 2017 is the year where we weren't able to actually produce state level rates for a lot of these risk factors and that are occurring among the high school population. And, you know, it's because the Youth Risk Behavior Survey is a voluntary survey, it doesn't actually fall into the law that was enacted in 2015 that focuses on that active mandatory consent for specific surveys within the school populations. South Dakota has had the opportunity, in 2017, to try and reach that participation level that we needed, both within and across schools. We don't fully know the impacts that law may have had, but what we do know is that the kind of consent is left to individual schools in terms of whether they require parents to provide that active consent or whether it's done kind of at the school level for us to go in and to administer that survey.
Okay, so I think we should make sure we're clear that the survey is private. Kids are being asked some intense questions, but their name and their personal information is not part of that data collection. Do I understand that correctly?
That is correct. It is a completely anonymous survey, so we don't identify the individual students. We don't identify what school or what grade that they're in. We don't identify the schools that do participate. What we're focused on is really trying to get the quality data that will help us make informed decisions. And we aren't looking at individual schools or individual students with that.
All right. So when the state legislature decided to strengthen those rules for parental consent, what was the debate about? What were their concerns? Why were they looking at that kind of intervention from peer in the first place?
As far as the individual thoughts, behind enacting that law, I'm not aware of what they would be. What I do know is that that they specifically are focused on kind of any survey that might be a mandatory survey. Because Department of Health survey, the YRBS, is a voluntary survey, it just does not kind of fall into that realm.
All right. So parents, so I want to talk about this idea of what's missing and how do we use that data? Now, you know, what does the gap mean? What's at stake here with not having the data on risky youth behaviors for a certain, you know, pretty extensive period of time, really?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the important things that we have seen kind of arise in the past year has been the use of e-cigarettes among the youth population. It was such a strong issue that the Surgeon General issued an advisory on e-cigarette use among health in December of 2018. And part of what had been the focus or been the reasoning behind issuing that advisory is one of the surveys that they use at the national level looked at an increase of about 78% if current e-cigarette users between 2017 and 2018. So it jumped from about 11.7% to 20.8%, which is a dramatic increase. One of the surveys that we use in South Dakota to monitor that sort of e-cigarette use is the YRBS. And you know, since we're only asking it every other year, we now have that gap of about 4 years.
What would we do with the data if we had it?
So the most important thing is just realizing that, monitoring what's going on within our high school population, that information is relayed with a lot of partners out in the community, that information is relayed back to the schools so that they can make informed decisions that will hopefully decrease use within that population. So it might be focusing on tougher punishments for youth that are bringing e-cigarettes to school, or it might be identifying what resources are available within the community and making sure that there's we're able to connect teens that might be using those e-cigarettes with services such as the South Dakota Quit Line to help get them off of those e-cigarettes.
So I was listening to Morning Edition on the way into work today, and they were talking about a lawsuit coming out of North Carolina about these companies really targeting kids with their advertising with flavored products for vaping. From what you just said, I understand, you know, having the data can affect policy. Can it also affect, you know, a grant, to sort of bring help into a community that needs it? Can it directly impact your ability to get funding for something that's needed?
Oh, certainly. I mean, this data, like I said, is used by a wide variety of stakeholders. And so, kind of have that funding through CDC to actually administer the survey, but there are a lot of other grant opportunities, both from the federal government and from other sort of organizations that are out there that do then help community, resiliency and response to things like this within the community. So there's a lot of money kind of at stake by not having that data and having to rely on older data. One of the potential outcomes is you're not able to show the increase that some other jurisdictions might be, and even though the strength of your application is very strong, the funders are also taking into what sort of impact that you'll have in the community, and if you're not able to show a high burden, your impact might be lower.
State epidemiologist Josh Clayton, we look forward to talking with you about this in the future and some of the efforts to prevent it. But I want to say thank you today, and we look forward to the next conversation.
Yes, thank you so much.